Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, Rivian are the next car company to get access to the Tesla supercharging network. Starts soon as well. The Tesla Model 3, ludicrous. And we'll talk Mercedes Vision EQXX setting records. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you about one of the cheapest places to charge your EV. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome back to EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information. No show yesterday, and that was because I was travelling. I did 7 hours round trip in the Polestar 2. I'll tell you how my two big charging sessions went if you want. If you don't care about my personal life, then I'll leave that till the very end. Today is Tuesday, 19th of March. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through hundreds of EV stories every day and whittle it down into maybe 20 minutes or so, so that, well, it's like a TLDR, really, of the EV world, so that you don't have to. We go live at 5 p.m. UK. That's currently 1 p.m. Eastern, because there's 4 hours between us at the minute, what with clock changes. Patreon supporters get the episodes as soon as they're ready and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Well, let's start with that Rivian news then. Another big day in the world of EV charging, at least in North America, because another car company gets access to another bunch of V3 Tesla superchargers. This time, from next month in April, it's Rivian's turn. R1S and R1T drivers equipped with their free adapter. Yes, their free adapter. Their J3400 to CCS1 adapter, enabling access to the supercharging network. Rivian drivers get another 15,000 places to charge across North America on top of about the same CCS1 native charges. The integration of Tesla superchargers is helped, they say, by Rivian's homemade in-house management of hardware and software. We'll get around to that in a moment. And Rivian, so their digital platform with the mobile app and the in-vehicle infotainment system, all designed themselves, enables it to be seamless. So let's get into what Rivian said about this yesterday then. Rivian vehicles are now compatible with the supercharger network, was their headline. And this looks like it's going to be a very simple, much like Ford doing it with the F-150, Lightning, the Mach-E, and I guess some retail customers of the e-Transit, but either way, this looks like it's going to be very seamless, very plug-and-chargey. Haven't got to use the Tesla app. It looks like it's just a case of rock on up, plug in, and away you go. Initiating that inside the vehicle in Rivian. Of course, Ford have got the Ford Pass app. And this, again, looks like a very, very slick way of, well, it's the Tesla experience. You turn up, you rock on up, you plug in, you walk away, and it starts charging. Well, let's have a look at what Rivian had to say on their announcement yesterday. Rivian owners now have access to the Tesla supercharger network and will start receiving NACS DC adapters in April. Range confidence keeps growing with a charging experience that's fast, seamless, and rapidly expanding, they say. And I think it's interesting they are using customer language there. They're calling it NACS, which is what their NACS, which is what a lot of people have had to call the Tesla connector until now, until we knew it was called J3400. And I think that is probably, you know, it's a good thing because that is some customer language there. It's incorrect because those two things are slightly different. J3400, the standard built on NACS to make it something else into a life of its own, a standard, if you like. But I think it's very important that we talk customer's language with this and so that people understand what it is. And even though, again, a lot of people won't know what NACS is or NACS, a lot of people just call it the Tesla connector. I think that's an important thing. But it's an important point, but I do want to always make mention of the fact that I see, because it's called the Tesla connector or NACS, there is an inevitable confusion, I think, there between what the things are. There is the plug, the connector, and there is the supercharging network, and they are entirely separate things, both connected because they're both Tesla things, although J3400 isn't anymore. So it's interesting to think about how some people are kind of confused around that, but we'll get to on a different show, we'll get to that. Rivian go on to say, access to abundant and high-quality fast charging is incredibly important for mass EV adoption, which is why we're so focused on expanding the available options. This spring, Rivian owners will be able to use an adapter to access over 15,000 compatible Tesla superchargers across North America. This is in addition to the 16,000 existing fast chargers they already have access to through other public charging networks. The website goes on to point out some of the things I just mentioned, actually. Because we handle our charging hardware and software in-house, we can seamlessly integrate most fast chargers, including the supercharging network, into our charging ecosystem. Our unified digital platforms make it easy to transition between our mobile app and in-vehicle infotainment. This allows Rivian owners to enjoy an end-to-end experience where they can do their trip planning, filter charges, set route preferences, navigate and add stops without missing a beat. And I think that's what's really interesting about this as well. It happened with Ford, and I wondered whether it was something that Ford had kind of engineered, and the marketing language around it was very, very good and very clever. Rivian doing the same thing. I think everyone's going to do the same thing. When this was announced a year ago, and I tried to think this through as quick as possible because the news came thick and fast, it seemed like some of the other car makers had capitulated to Tesla. Tesla had, for want of a better word, won. It's not really a battle, but you know what I mean by that. That they'd got charging right and that everybody else had gone, you know what, we'll just do it your way. And in both the Ford and the Rivian announcements, they were both keen to say, hey, we've got charging networks where we've brought together lots of different things, and we're just adding the Tesla network in to make it even better. Ford did the same thing with theirs, which is, hey, we got the, all of the different chargers that we bring together. Oh, and a new network. And Rivian doing the same, which I think is very interesting, by saying, hey, we can add lots of networks. Oh, and Tesla's one of them. We'll bring them into ours. And it's actually turned the tables kind of completely, actually, hasn't it? It's like, well, we've got our own thing going on and we'll add Tesla into it as a layer on top and a nice polish and a nice bonus for our drivers. But I think they've found a way around, seeming like they've gone cap in hand to Tesla to go, hey, look, we couldn't do it, so we've come to you. Which is probably the truth, you know, in fairness, isn't it? But anyway, moving on. Compatible superchargers will show up in Rivian Navigation when you're planning trips. The charger speeds and availability information listed. You can plug and charge with automatic billing. Simply plug the charger into the vehicle and charging will begin automatically without having to pull up an app. And the map that they've put on their website shows, you know, quite clearly the Rivian Adventure Network on the coasts at the moment. And the compatible Tesla superchargers, I mean, it is night and day in terms of those areas, those charging deserts, if you like. If you don't live somewhere with lots of DC fast charging, the routes that it opens up is just fantastic. Access to the supercharger network will require an adapter, which begins shipping to all Rivian owners for free. This spring, the North American charging standard connector used on superchargers becomes widely adopted across the industry. In 2025, our vehicles will ship with new fully integrated hardware. And we saw that on the unveil of the new Rivian vehicles recently. One of the best things about the J3400 NACS Tesla connector, call it what you will for now, is that it is just so much more elegant and smaller. And it was one of the standout things that Rivian said, hey, here's our new vehicles. And there's these tiny charge flaps that we've always seen on Teslas until now. And you think, that looks pretty good, doesn't it? Really fantastic news for Rivian owners. And I'll pop a link in the show notes for you to read more about this if you want to. Let's talk a little bit more now about Tesla's Model 3 Highland, so-called Highland. Should it ever have been called Highland? Tesla said, well, no, we never use that word. Ludicrous edition unveiled in some code. Now, Tesla's performance version of the Model 3, not on sale right now in any of the places where they have relaunched the Model 3, so-called Highland in China, Europe, and now the US, introduced globally without its performance model variant coming off sale, which, if you wanted to get one from inventory, meant you could get a performance model, in some cases, with the tax credit as well, cheaper than, you know, the long range, and get discounts and inventory as well. But if you were waiting for the latest greatest, we think it's going to be very soon, because having a look at Clean Technica, they've done the old right-click view source code thing that somebody did with the Rivian website just before the launch of the new Rivian vehicles, and they found some of the code in the back end of the website. Not hacking the website or anything like that, just pretty much doing what you can do, whether you're in, you know, inspecting the code or inspecting things like that. So, recent findings from the online configurator source code reveal the name Ludicrous. We thought it was going to be called Ludicrous all along, didn't we? But anyway, there are also some, Clean Technica found some specs listed. They're probably placeholders because it's at 310 miles of range, 162 miles an hour top speed, 0 to 63.2, and we think that acceleration time will be under 3 seconds for the Ludicrous because it's getting a redesign, a re-engineering We would assume that those will, all of those 310 miles of range, 162 miles an hour top speed, that one might stay the same, but certainly the 0 to 60 time would probably change, you would think, upon official release. Well, the ludicrous model has been spotted in the back end code for both the US and the European markets, hinting at a potential simultaneous release in those regions. And links to the post on X and Clean Technica in the show notes if you want to read more. Now, let's talk extreme efficiency. And remember recently on the podcast, I was talking about the CEO of Lucid, Peter Rawlinson, saying that he thinks the focus, the battleground should be on efficiency, and that 10 miles per kilowatt hour, it was 10, or was it 8 miles per kilowatt hour? These are the stretch targets that we should be working towards, because that means smaller batteries, more lightweighting, lighter vehicles, more efficiency. And that is rather than just stuffing bigger batteries inside cars and, you know, actually let's make the vehicles better. Well, Mercedes heard that and said, hold my Pilsner, because in fairness, they've been working on this for a very long time. The Mercedes Vision EQXX, the electric concept, achieved new efficiency records covering 627.6 miles across the Arabian Peninsula with an efficiency of 8.4 miles per kilowatt hour. 8.4 miles per kilowatt hour in a normal car. And this is not a vehicle with, you know, one seat and that's not practical. I was lucky enough to talk to the engineer behind this last year at a conference, and it's very much a proving ground for Mercedes technology. But one of the key things he said about it was, don't get them wrong, this is not a performance car. This is 0 to 60 in 7 seconds or so. This is not something that they're engineering to absolutely hit the best specs and having to have all that battery cooling for the edge cases of when you know, really want to floor it. This is a vehicle that is about pure efficiency. The journey marks the vehicle's third long distance trip and its second time exceeding 1,000 kilometers on a single charge, showcasing remarkable range and efficiency. And they didn't even drain the battery down to empty. The test concluded with the Vision EQXX having an estimated range of 192 miles left, suggesting a potential total range of 819 miles. Mercedes equates the 8.4 miles per kilowatt hour efficiency to 282 miles per gallon if they were doing a combustion test here. Previous drives demonstrated 7.1 and 7.5 miles per kilowatt hour. They did Stuttgart to Calais and Stuttgart to Silverstone, which is when I spoke to them just after they'd got to the UK, and they did that Germany to the UK run. The EQXX's latest journey included diverse driving conditions. They hit urban routes, some desert terrains, and all of that was to have some real-world testing. It wasn't on a track, and it wasn't under controlled conditions. It was all about proving the thermal management of Mercedes' system. The car's solar roof, no doubt they're in a sunny place. The solar roof did its job. 117 cells. It captured 1.8 kilowatt hours of energy during the drive alone, which added about 15 miles to the journey in terms of total range. Now, they were in a very hot climate, so did they use the air conditioning? Yes, like I mentioned, the air conditioning was on throughout the trip, and it maintained its high energy efficiency, partly because since the last time I saw them working on this vehicle, they've added a new high-efficiency heat pump system. That's something, like many of the technologies on this vehicle, which will end up in Mercedes road-going cars. Very hot climate, didn't suffer, had the aircon on, equipped with a 100 kilowatt hour battery and a single motor. Like I say, this is not a dual motor fire breathing beast. It is a very well considered car in terms of its practical, but designed with technologies that some will and some won't end up on you know, mainstream road going cars like the Active Aero and stuff. But some of that will, with a single motor, 241 horsepower, which is comparable to, you know, an entry-level Model 3 standard range, for instance. And so this thing is just brilliant to talk about. I love it. So that whole thing about efficiency being the future, Mercedes totally signed up for that. Well, it's going to be a big year for VW's ID Bus. Buzz, the long wheelbase version of that, going on sale. It's the only version that the US will get, for instance, but then we will get it as well. And the VW ID Buzz electric minivan, if you want to call it that, launching in the US this year, will not be made in the US. It will continue to be made in Hanover, in Germany. The production of the ID Buzz stays in the place that it always has been, close to its debut location and Volkswagen's roots as well. Despite speculation, they might shift production to Chattanooga, Tennessee, alongside the other VW models. The ID Buzz, available in Europe now in a short wheelbase form, and the longer three-row variant coming to North America with options for rear-wheel drive or all-wheel drive soon, we think, as well, a GTX version. I'm not sure why you want to spec a GTX one of these, because it's, you know, why do you want a really fast, sporty version of this? But it's cool they're doing it. It features the larger 91 kilowatt hour battery, new software as well. That's compared to the European 82 kilowatt hour battery in the short wheelbase model. And so range will obviously be improved, but then it's EPA versus WLTP. So if you get 250 miles out of this, then I think you're doing really well. No, you won't be going into the complete wilderness and some of the places that you'd take a combustion RV. That's not what this vehicle is for, though. While the US pricing remains undetermined, ID Buzz will be priced higher than typical vans, camper vans, minivans, whatever you call them where you are, because of its electric drivetrain and its import status, disqualifying it for the $7,500 federal tax credit if you wanted to buy it, but use the commercial clean vehicle credit, possibly the leasing federal tax credit workaround, lease this vehicle and you still get the discount, and the long wheelbase version of that should be very, very popular here as well. Let's talk about the Jaguar I-Pace next then, should we? And a story for my UK viewers who have this vehicle. Jaguar sent me a HSE one a couple of years ago for review. We had it for about a month and I was a huge fan of the I-Pace. That was all with the newer software and stuff. I know that the older ones, maybe not quite the same experience, but either way, I-Pace owners on the forums are pretty unhappy because of Jaguar's decision to restrict any of the smart home charging features. This particularly impacts if you're on Octopus Intelligent Go, like I am, and Podpoint's solo chargers as well. Those charging schemes were endorsed by Jaguar, but now they've done a U-turn and cited security concerns for the change, saying that an unauthorized app could potentially access personal vehicle data, prompting a restriction on data access to these connected vehicles. Jaguar Land Rover is limiting the applications to simply Alexa skills or the in-control remote, but not allowing these smart electricity tariffs to work with the vehicle, which I think is a shame. I think it's understandable that those owners are going to be frustrated. Jaguar Land Rover saying they're safeguarding customer data and vehicle integrity, but I've got no worries about that. You don't have to open the whole vehicle up. I'm on Octopus Intelligent Go, and it's a huge saving. Now, some owners on the forum saying that they're spending 30% more rising costs of charging, but it's actually, I mean, I think it would be way more if you can't integrate with those and you haven't got a charger that can integrate. Now, I've got on the driveway the Polestar 2 and the MG ZS. Neither of those natively work with the Octopus Intelligent Go tariff. And so but my charger, a Zappy version 2, does. And so it's the charger that, this change wouldn't affect me, but it's about 7 or 8 pence overnight. And you know, around 30 pence during the day. So it's significantly different. And it's a fantastic tariff, by the way. I have a referral code for friends of this podcast where if you want to move to Octopus, and many of the people I know already have done, but if you haven't done yet, check the show notes. We get to share £100 between us for you moving to Octopus. And this tariff saves me a huge amount of money because I plug my car in at, you know, 7 or 8 in the evening, and they say, hey, yeah, from 9 p.m. or whatever, you can have some cheap electricity earlier than you would normally get it, and you get it all night long. And of course, when that happens, Home Assistant will kick in and charge the home battery, a nice extra 10 kilowatt hours at the cheap rate. And if it's rainy the next day when we've unplugged the car, we're still working off the battery at that cheap rate. And so it saved us a huge amount of money. I'm a huge fan of that, but understandable frustration here. Some people on the forum saying, is it because Jaguar Land Rover are teeing up some sort of version of their to do it themselves, or just, you know, paid access to the app? And I can't work out the story behind this. I can't see that would be the case. If you have any insights, let me know, leave a comment, and we'll get to the bottom of this. But understandable frustration for those I-Pace owners. Now let's talk. Okay, this is heading towards supercar territory, or at least something very special territory, and that is electric Maserati. So many of these performance companies over the years have said, if not Maserati specifically, oh, we can't go electric. Our customers like the noise and drama of combustion, and they all do. Ferrari, McLaren, they'll all do it. Well, the Maserati Grecale Folgore has been designed to be their next all-electric offering. They started out with the GT car, the Gran Turismo. Now they're going to this, which is a more of an SUV crossover style. Skateboard battery with 33 modules in the floor of the vehicle. And the way they've done it is to make it work is they've actually reduced the ground clearance on the electric version compared to the combustion to try and lower the vehicle down. So lowering the floor rather than raising the whole vehicle, because you sit on top of the battery. And so rather than having a very, very, in comparison, higher seated position, they've just lowered the whole vehicle and the ground clearance compared to the combustion. Interesting way of doing it, isn't it? Available in a single trim level, the Grecale Folgore moves away from the GT categorizations of the ICE models. Mileage, maybe 265 miles, maybe 300 miles, depending on what size tyres you're running on this. Battery-wise, they've put a 96 kilowatt-hour battery into it from the Chinese CATL, so the very best of the best that's out there. 400-volt system, unlike the 800-volt system that we saw in its higher-performance cousin car that came first, that had a smaller battery, 83 kilowatt hour, and a different architecture. Dual motor setup, 550 horsepower, so decent production power out of this. And the paddles behind the steering wheels in the combustion car, that'd be changing gears. In this, it is to change the regen. Four driving modes: off-road, max range, GT, and sport mode. And one of the things that reviewers said maybe wasn't so great was the fake noise. They haven't quite, I say fake, you know, the synthetic driving noise, not quite dialed in perfectly yet. More like a drone at high speed. And you can't turn it off either. But they'll get that right with software. 150 kilowatt peak DC charging rate, sub 4 second 0 to 60 on this. And, you know, you'd think 100,000 plus price tag on this. So like I say, not for the likes of everybody, but a very interesting vehicle from a brand famous for their combustion vehicles. Oh, let's talk Fisker next, should we? Things are not happy in Fisker world, sadly. The Ocean SUV, crackingly designed vehicle, looks really good. And actually, people have got it already, early owners, I think, love lots of bits of it, but have been frustrated, I think that's fair to say, by things like the software. And sadly now, Fisker are pausing production. They say initially for 6 weeks from mid-March to reevaluate their inventory and pursue some other strategies financially. The decision aimed at allowing time for ongoing discussions with what they call a significant automotive player. It's Nissan. We all know it's Nissan, but they say a significant automotive player regarding the creation and production of an EV platform in the US. It's Nissan. They want the truck stuff. But really, what do Nissan need Fisker for that Nissan couldn't do themselves? I don't know. Anyway, a recent financing round promised Fisker up to $150 million, depending on the successful filing of their financial reports from last year. And so we'll see if that money does come through. Shares plummeted by 16% in a single day yesterday, with a decrease of about 90% in the current year to date alone. The company made just over 10,000 vehicles last year, but delivered only 5,000 in the same time frame. In the early months of this year, about 1,000 have been manufactured, about 1,300 delivered. So good luck to everyone at Fisker and hope they can pull through. Let's talk electric buses next. I love stories like this. Stockholm is initiating a tender for 380 electric buses to go fully electric in their public transport fleet in Stockholm by 2026. Approximately a third of the bus fleet is set to transition to zero emission over the next few years. The effort beginning with a tender for bus operations in parts of the area, with a current contract set to expire next August and then going all electric. Future tenders will address other parts of the area, and the move to electric buses has started already. 29 of them on the roads in parts of Stockholm, and in the upcoming winter, parts of the area scheduled to introduce another 200 electric buses as they move towards electrifying public transportation. And I love this because so many times over the years, you know, how many times have I said it? I brought you stories where, you know, so-and-so city or town or area has bought five new electric buses, and I want to go, yeah, but we want to hear about 500 new electric buses. And so this, I love stuff like this. Nice big order. We'll finish up with a couple of bits of charging news around the world. In the UK, the UK government extends a £350 grant covering up to 75% of the cost of purchasing and installing EV charge points, now including residents that don't have private driveways, but with access to on-street parking. EV owners have to seek approval from their local council for the installation of cross-pavement charging solutions. You go online to do this. The move is part of a series of infrastructure announcements by the DfT, Department of Transport, that is, or Department for Transport, I should say, which also confirmed £185 million as part of the levy funding. That would be the local electric vehicle infrastructure, giving money to local councils to, employ people to be EV experts and things like that. Training courses starting for local authorities to address technology, procurement and critical areas as well. The inaugural meeting of the Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Forum is being led by notable figures like the AA's president, Edmund King, a big fan of electric vehicles, aiming to identify then overcome the obstacles and help advise government and departments in the deployment of charging stations. That's good news. And finally, where's the best place to charge your electric vehicle? Well, Ohio would like you to know that their doors are open if you'd like to move there and charge your car, because it's one of the least expensive places to charge in the United States. The average cost to charge an EV in Ohio at public stations is 38 cents per kilowatt hour. That's below the national average. US average pricing is 45 cents per kilowatt hour, according to Stable Auto in Ohio. The challenge for EV drivers maybe more about the availability of public charging stations than the actual cost of charging. But good news that some states are able to offer much lower charging costs. And so, yes, I wasn't on the podcast yesterday. In case you were wondering where I was, I had to do a little bit of travel yesterday, and that is from my home in Dorset up to Birmingham and back. So it's about a couple of hundred miles up and a couple of hundred miles down. It's around the low teens, about 13, 14 degrees here at the moment. I was travelling during the day when the motorways were going to be a little bit busier, but always try to stick about 68 or 70 miles an hour on GPS. So not going over the speed limit, but not going particularly quickly. And I have to say, I had two incredible charging experiences from two big charging stations that I wanted to go and check out. The first of them was an InstaVolt station at Stroud Park, and that is it opened last March, been open about a year now, and I hadn't been there. And for my YouTube viewers, if you're watching the YouTube version of this show, I'll pop a picture up on screen, and that's just half of it. There's like 40 chargers here. Now, the InstaVolt stuff is just off the motorway, and then just further down, there's a big Osprey installation as well that I didn't get to, but the InstaVolt installation at Stroud Park is wonderfully, wonderfully made and brilliantly signposted, has a variety of charging hardware. So I used the Alpatronic chargers, the hyperchargers, because they were the first ones I pulled in, and I swung into it because they can charge at 150 kilowatts, but the Polestar was half full at that point, and it still pulled 130, and it ramped down. And so I've got some BYD chargers here as well, a large area painted on the floor, which is kind of green, that I saw an EV truck pull into, and they sort of pulled through and blocked about four chargers, but there was loads of spare chargers. It's not a proper pull-through design, but they did need to do that to get the cable to the EV truck, but it was fine. It wasn't blocking anybody. I popped in, got myself a quick Costa, and was on the way again. So I stopped for 10 minutes there, and then up to Brum, then down again. And I wanted to stop at, I needed about a 10 or 12 minute stop. And I chose to go to the M4 services that intersects with the A34. If you know that route, then you know how incredibly busy it is. And at that motorway service station for years, there has always been, again, I'll put it on screen, there's always been a couple of the old legacy grid-serve chargers that took over from Electric Highway. I can't tell you, the M4 runs east-west from London over to Bristol. It's such a busy road. A34 intersects it up and down. And these chargers, there was always a queue. And there was two, I think, or three. Maybe there was two. Either way, I wanted to go check out the new ones that opened last year, because they are now, there's I think 12 of them, but they are the new ABB chargers, the grid server rolling out. So again, 100 and, Not sure what the top speed of this. Anyway, I arrived with 4%. So I got 149 kilowatts straight away on the Polestar. And it was one of those ones where it was a mad dash because the car charges pretty quickly. They've really helped that they've software updates over the years have sorted out the charge curve of the Polestar. I gather I've only had it for 6 weeks. But it really, it held way past 50% over 100 kilowatts. And I didn't need it. I didn't need that much. I was just watching. Just watching it charge really quickly, had a nice proper break for like 18, 20 minutes. And then I had probably about 10 or 12 pounds more than I needed to. I could have unplugged and made it home. And so that particular charging location is such a busy one. And it was busy when I was there yesterday during the day, about 2 PM coming home. And congratulations to both of those charging networks. It really was a fantastic experience. Clean, tidy, wonderful hardware. We've just talked about US pricing, I must admit. It is expensive. You know, it's 70-80p. I would say DC fast charging on average around the UK in many places. It shot up a couple of years ago, never came down again. So, but I didn't mind because I don't really travel very much. I'm making this show for you, and it was a great experience, and it was wonderful to know that I would be passing on good news today rather than having a moan about charging. So, just fantastic. Any of your good charging stories, I'd like to hear those. Let me know. And as always, thank you to our Patreon legends for supporting the show. Well, you can support the podcast by just listening to the free version and hearing the odd ad or two. Or you can watch it on YouTube and watch the odd ad or two. But really, I pay my way by the Patreon fans. This is all I do. This is my job now. And this is 100% of what I dedicate my time to. And I couldn't do it without the Patreon legends at patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. You can sign up for $5 or $10 a month, maybe more, for individuals or organizations. And thanks, as always, to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie, and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel, Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and lease plan electric moments, all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.